The car you drive every day should be fun.
But it has to do the boring stuff too, like commute, be affordable, and haul your groceries.
You can have both, and we'll help you find it. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
This is still cool to be in the podcast studio here.
It is.
Together.
I'm still
marveling at this fact.
Yes. Well, you wouldn't think we'd get this excited about sitting across a table from one another, because
so
we've done that quite a bit. But it is interesting. You and I have even talked about the fact that just as easy going as we could make this on the phone, the ability to see each other has actually sped our interaction up again,
because
it's all that nonverbal stuff that happens, which is really cool.
Which I enjoy. Well, guys, thank you so much for listening. Welcome back to the podcast. We're excited. We're tweaking levels as we're going here. We're tweaking volumes.
Lots of learning is still happening in the studio.
Great.
We're still refining stuff. There's still a little bit of echoing going on that I want to solve, because,
yeah,
of course, I'm a geek.
Is.
But
there
you know.
Is. We'll get there. We'll get there. All right. Well, we're podcasting, guys. We've got a lot of fun stuff. I love your questions here when you write to us for your own debate, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com, or on the website. I love that you're writing in, because we've got a couple of guys that have written some interesting stories, and I always am saying now, it's a lot about the human interest part of what we talk about.
It's the story part,
it's
for
the
sure.
It's the storyline.
Absolutely,
it almost, it matters what cars you and I recommend, but it almost is about 50%, you know, the story of the folks writing in versus the cars we recommend. It's almost equal weight now to me.
Well, the joke still happens. I mean, there are certain cars. You say, I have $25,000. I want a 4-door all wheel drive fun car. We're going to say WRX. Thank you for writing in. But if that was what you just wrote in this week, we probably won't cover it, because it's been covered. I mean, there is this factor of there are cars out there in every segment that are fun, and they're going to get recommended.
Yeah.
You know, if you're listening for us to pull out the random thing, unless it's a really random story, because, you know, I'm waiting for the one where the answer is the Aztec. I don't know. There's me throwing down a gauntlet. Can somebody recommend that? I saw one recently on the local Utah equivalent of Craigslist for $3,500. And I have to say, for $3,500, I thought, huh.
Do you mean they pay you $3,500 to take it
true.
Off their hands?
But I actually thought, if you're gonna do a winter beater, what's a better winter beater car than a Pontiac Aztec? And I never saw
a Verano Cabriolet, clearly.
Well, yeah, true. No, that's apparently the spring car
the spring.
In Park City.
They keep seeing these.
They've come out of the woodwork
here,
and I can't wait for them to go back. But you know what? Seriously, when I lived in L.A., I never saw Aztecs, except for like the 1 year they were made, okay?
Right, when they came out.
Moved here. They're all like 10 years old, and yet there's many of them that just appear all winter and drive around. I keep thinking, that is actually the best winter beater, because if somebody dings that car, you go, yeah, it doesn't look any worse.
You know what? Could you match the other side? Could you actually drive around this side, and that will have a symmetrical car? Great. Thanks. All right. Well, we've got Patrick in St. Louis, who has a story about Phaetons, about cheap Phaetons. And Phaetons in his life.
Yep, I know.
Which I chose specifically. Patrick, I think you knew this would get chosen. I have this feeling, but I'm really excited here. And we've got Justin out in Philadelphia, who's a father of four and desperately needing a sniper shot, because he's typing this email, rereading it, and reading his words that he drives an 06 Prius
that he can't
as his
believe.
Daily driver. And he can't believe he's typing these words and realizing even more how much he needs a car so desperately. We're really excited to jump into these. I do want to jump in up top here about a little piece of news that caught my eye recently about electric car sales taking off in Europe, thanks to Renault, our friends over at Renault. I have wondered about this, and a few years ago when I was in Berlin, I was talking to some friends of mine there, and you know, they were saying, yes, Teslas are starting to be here. You're starting to see them around a little bit more.
Sure.
But the reason is, when you're buying a car at that price point, and I've said this before, if you're getting something that doesn't go above 155 miles an hour, it's pointless to spend that kind of money. So if you're shopping this price range in this category, you might as well go get the S-Class or the 7 Series or whatever it is, because it's truly a you've got to beat an airplane. I mean, you've got the Autobahn.
In Germany, you want to be the big dog on the Autobahn if you're spending that kind of money.
Yes.
And Tesla, the weird chink in the armor there is that they happen to not be able to pull that off. All the things they
strange?
Can do, but yet they aren't fast enough for your German executive spending 100+ grand. That's interesting.
It's amazing to me. But at that speed, let's say we've got it planted at 155. How fast is your charge level going down.
That would be interesting to know.
You're watching that thing drop like a stone. And worried about, okay, where's my next stop here? Whereas that doesn't happen if you've got the S-Class. Well, V12, who cares?
I'm gonna get pieces of this wrong. I'm remembering fragments of it, but I think it was Car and Driver a couple of years ago when they did their annual performance test.
Okay.
And they drove their long-term Model S out to the track and put it around in its, you know, hottest setup speed and got like a lap out of it, and they were done. Charge-wise.
Seriously.
It was VIR, and they just, which is a long track, but yeah. It's one lap. It's not the Nürburgring, you know, and so they hammered it around the track as hot as they could make it, and they got a lap out of it. So it'd be really interesting to know. I mean, again, that's not what the car's made for, but you're bringing up a great point about the fact that that makes them a hard sell in Germany, whereas they're the perfect sell in Norway or Los Angeles or San Francisco. They're perfect because how are you using it? You don't need any of that kind of speed. You don't need that. It doesn't have to get around a racetrack. It needs to creep through traffic.
Yeah.
And now with autopilot, you can creep and not even worry about it.
And really look at your phone at this point.
Yeah, frightening. Huh?
Really be serious about looking at your phone. Well, part of the point here is that is one element of electric car ownership in Germany. The other here is, you know, a city car. And that's what they're really talking about here in the news article is, yeah, you know, the smaller electric cars, but it's just now being democratized to where everybody can afford them and the range anxiety is going away. Well, BMW had the i3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a few out there and they're coming down in price, but I still think we're at the cusp of this, you know, everybody will buy the small city electric thing. You had the Renault Twizy in Monaco.
I did.
That's a not useful car.
Imagine, for those of you that don't know what a Twizy is, imagine just the cockpit of an F-16 or an F-15. Just the cockpit that has wheels on all four corners. That's pretty much what this car is.
It's a good analogy.
And honestly, in the same trip to Monaco, this is a couple years ago now, my wife and I were there very briefly, shocked at how much everything cost on the off season. But anyway, but it was fun. So we drove Twizy around for one afternoon and for like a couple hours. And the day before, I had seen a McLaren P1.
Oh.
Okay. $1 million-plus car inching its way through Monaco. And while I was impressed that the owner actually thought to do that, once I drove the Twizy, I went, no, this is the perfect car for Monaco. As much as I'm impressed that you showed off in your McLaren P1, you're insane.
That's the place to go.
The Twizy is essentially just, it's like a scooter with a cage around you, and it was perfect for the tiny streets of Monaco. And then we actually did, it's actually one of the extras on our pilgrimage film disc. We did, as close as we could, the F1 circuit in the Twizy.
Just so cool. I'm glad you did that.
Even
at low speeds, who cares?
It was the number one reason to rent the Twizy. My wife thought I was even more insane. She's like, you want to drive in that and you want to do what? You want to do the racetrack.
I want to do what now?
At 20? I said, yes, at 15. I don't care.
At one point, we
had a cyclist woman who was ahead of us and we couldn't pass her because of traffic. That was really disconcerting. But
doing it
in the Twizy, I just kept thinking, they're going how fast through here in F1?
Yeah.
It was even more shocking. If you find yourself in Monaco, figure out some vehicle to drive, other than a bicycle, even if it's a Twizy, some vehicle to try to drive as much of the track as possible and think about the speeds they're doing in F1. You'll have a totally different perspective. I mean, you and I have driven Spa.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I can, as much as we are not those drivers, I can imagine an F1 driver doing Spa.
Gosh.
But a Twizy around Monaco, and I went, I'm sorry, I don't know how they aren't all dead.
Yeah, yeah, because you pop out into the sunlight at the end of the tunnel, which in itself is part of the challenge, mm-hmm. because your eyes are adjusting to the dark at, you know, 160 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. You pop out, bright sunlight, and suddenly you're hard on the brakes and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's such a demanding track. Well, I am going to tie this into a question to start off with here from CJ DeGrossa on Instagram.
All right.
Thank you so much for writing. He's asking, is there still a market for sport trucks, i.e. the GMC Cyclone, the Ford Lightning, Dakota RT? Do we see a comeback? Mm. And hopefully you see the thread here of where I'm going.
Okay.
Because if it were to come back, I've talked about electric pickups. We did on the last podcast. We were talking about commercial vehicles as an electric truck. But how about electric sport trucks? Because, all right, if we're not there to the towing capacity and the cargo capacity there yet, why not bring that back? Because apparently you're still thinking there is a market for the sport trucks. There was in the, you know, in the heyday when those trucks were for sale.
In the 90s, yeah.
Think of these sport trucks as now electric, all-wheel drive. Most of the chassis carries batteries, and they don't have to carry anything or tow any loads or anything like that. They're just the sport trucks. I wonder if there's a market for that, but maybe not. But maybe if they're electric, then this is
back. That is an interesting twist. You know what it makes me wonder, though? With all of the five-seat CUVs worried about...
Small, mid-size. Yeah,
with all of those worried about trying to have car, or in the world of like the Macan and the GLA, sports car handling in an SUV shape. And what are they also? Well, they're supposed to be luxurious.
Yeah.
Do all of those triggers, if you will, point toward that sports pickup idea being a successful idea? If that was a really nice pickup cab and it had a sports car handling, aren't we kind of making a better El Camino here? but I am
electric
not...
El Camino. The EL stands for something now.
Oh no.
You've hit on it.
You're right. You've accidentally walked into that. That was a room full of rakes for me.
That was what's in here. Well done. You've done it. An electric El Camino, or the Holdens. The ones in the Utes in Australia.
What's that called? I forget what that's called, but yeah.
It's not the Commodore.
It's the Maloo.
The Maloo. You're right. Thank you. What about those as electric, some cargo?
Yeah.
But the kind of cargo you would use for an El Camino.
Mm-hmm.
My mind is exploding here.
Yeah.
What if? And what if that were the new sport trucks?
Interesting. Okay. I see where you're going.
Okay. Well, To be explored here. I'm very intrigued by that. We'll get to more questions here. I kind of like mixing it up a little bit, but I say let's just jump right into Patrick's debate here.
Definitely, yeah.
It's out in St. Louis, Missouri. And thanks for writing, Patrick. I do think you knew that we're going to get into this, because a lot of this here is, it's about the Phaeton.
Mm-hmm.
Todd has a proclivity for the Phaeton.
I do.
He's made the T-shirt,
we've seen it
around.
I wear the T-shirt. Yes, there
we've
are a few people
other
that have
people
them.
Have
yes.
it around.
Thank you to all of you that have bought the Ask Me About Cheap Phaeton shirts. It's one of those shirts where you kind of have to lean into the person and go, what does your shirt say? So it is a conversation starter if you wear it in the right place, but it's also one of those shirts that people are going to ignore if they don't get it. But I have heard of conversation starting as a result of that shirt. And
so
I would still love to have a cheap Phaeton and talk about it on the show. Patrick has a good friend that bought one.
He actually bought one. Here we go. So he knew what he was getting into. Patrick describes the entire experience. He even had the purchase price, the $5,000 for a 2004 V8. And he had that amount of money set aside for maintenance. So get this. This is a twist that I don't know that any of us thought of. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Once I describe this, he's having problems getting maintenance done.
Yeah, I'm not actually too surprised.
So, therefore, you'd think the only people doing the maintenance are the VW dealers, but he's actually having trouble getting the dealers to agree to work on the car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're in St. Louis, big city, plenty of options.
Yeah.
And so the only place that is willing to work on it, begrudgingly, is the Bentley dealer, who, of course, charges Bentley kinds of pricing
and
to work on a $5,000 car.
And there's some shared technology there, which is probably why the Bentley guys are doing it. And that also comes down to, I'm sure, about the fact that Bentley probably has some sort of clause as a dealer where they'll take anybody.
And you
the
think?
Volks, I think so. If you're going to pay the prices, why not? I mean,
they'll
like,
take your money if you're going to pay it.
The Ferrari dealer here in Salt Lake will do maintenance on whatever.
Will they really?
Absolutely. Bring your car in. But of course, they're charging you Ferrari of Salt Lake prices. But they're also the only place that works on most people's Lotuses and other kinds of things. But they're a Ferrari dealer. All their guys are Ferrari trained. But I've actually heard of people that were insane that felt like they would get best service there. So they paid Ferrari prices to get their just car worked on, which is madness, by the way. So I bet you the Bentley dealer is kind of like that, where they'll work on anything. They're not going
to
turn you away.
Happy to
but the Volkswagen dealer is the other end, because the big thing about those cars when they came out is they trained service technicians, whole separate level of training that
were
only
right.
at certain Volkswagen dealers. And I'm pretty sure that if you're not one of those technicians, you've probably been told by somebody at Volkswagen, don't you dare touch that car.
Possibly.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I suppose so. because of the training involved and the next level of
because it was a
stuff.
Specific tech training for that car. So that is the other part about this equation. If we actually go down this road, I'm going to have to dig. I know this sounds insane. I have to dig in locally and find because like our local guy that you and I use as our independent Porsche mechanic does Volkswagen. There's no part of me that thinks he would touch a Phaeton and know what he's doing. I don't think he would. And he's a great guy and knows his stuff. But why would he have any Phaeton training? He wouldn't. So I'd be curious to just find out in Salt Lake, is there anybody that's even Phaeton trained? Because that is a real issue. It's a genuine issue with this
car. It is. So now...
Like I said, ask me about cheap Phaetons.
I mean, it snowballs. And it's wide now because now his friend's repair budget is gone. And the car has undeterminable electrical issues that cause it to not start randomly.
Yeah.
Getting it diagnosed now takes a small fortune, and until his friend quits teaching and gets his Phaeton repair certification,
which he might start an extra business.
Actually, could make more money at least if he's a school teacher and he's got his summers available. Hey, does your Phaeton need service?
It was fifth graders all year, and it's Phaetons all summer. That's really what we're doing.
Is that a new T-shirt? All right,
probably. Yeah.
So what he's asking for is because of his story here, he has moved up in the world. He's been promoted to an executive position at his company, and this promotion has coincided with his desire for a new car, which is great. So he's got a small commute here, 25 miles round trip. He's been driving a 2013 Honda CR-V, and he's saying, well, you know, it's decent, but plasticky, hard seats. He'd rather have a sedan than the CUVs.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot about CUVs, and they're great for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Apparently not for Patrick, which is fine.
But the tough part here is that Patrick really is realizing what I'd like to have is a Phaeton. I want a sleeper luxury car.
Right.
But my buddy has had such a difficult time with his Phaeton, getting it serviced, if nothing
else. Just getting it serviced. We can buy them all day long. Anybody can buy them.
Exactly. And also the 04s are supposed to be plagued with the most gremlins, unfortunately. But so that's the problem. He's going, I could go cheap Phaeton. My budget... accounts for that. I would love to because it is a sleeper luxury car.
Right.
He needs the sleeper luxury car, but he can't handle the Phaeton, doesn't really want to go German. The other twist here is the fact that he works at a company where the president of the company drives an 07 Honda Accord.
So
we have that problem that's come up before on the podcast where you work at a company and you're a car guy and you got a promotion that is a well-deserved promotion and you now have money where, as we've joked before, everybody has the hole you put your money into.
Yeah.
If you're a car person, it's your car. But if you roll up to your business in the nicest car in the parking lot and you're mid-pack executive, what does that say? Should you worry about it? Patrick's worried because the president of the company drives a beat down Honda Accord. So he's saying, guys, I want luxury, but it can't be flashy. So he's taken all the German marks right off the board.
Right.
BMW, Porsche, Mercedes, isn't going to happen. What can he get that is the Phaeton sleeper style luxury car?
Or as Patrick puts it differently here, what's the nicest car he can buy with the worst badge? Great way of putting
this. It is very good, yes.
All right, so as you said, the Germans are out. He thinks the Japanese luxury brands might be okay, but not his first choice. Has not gone down the road of driving anything yet, but definitely wants the four-door sedan because he's got two kids. He picks them up from daycare every day. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's jump in here. We've got $30,000 to work with that might get bumped, Patrick, just saying. It might get
no one's
pushed
surprised,
on
but
slightly. Not driving a better car than your boss. That's such a... Because you want to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I'd be curious, Patrick, as to what your boss puts his money into. Maybe it's travel. Maybe
that's a great question.
I mean, travel is very legitimate. I mean...
It's a great question.
You know, that's a lot of times when people aren't into material stuff or car stuff or whatever. It's sometimes it's just experiences, which is great. We just happen to like cars.
Well, but, you know, here's my other twist. And look, I realize that I'm actually kind of recommending you have this conversation. You may not want to. But what are the other cars in the parking lot where you work? My question is this. Is there anything else in the parking lot that you know cost more than 30 grand? Because if you roll up in a BMW or a Mercedes that cost you less than 30 grand, it might suggest you're a baller. But if so-and-so in the parking lot has a $50,000 pickup, you do have the ability to say to them, yeah, my monthly payment is less than yours. You may think I'm a snob, but my Porsche Cayman cost me 30 grand. I'm not – Porsche Cayman doesn't work for you, but I'm just using it as the obvious target car.
Right,
you could get one at 30 grand. You could pull into the parking lot. People would be like, oh my gosh, Patrick bought a Porsche. But if you park it next to the guy with the $50,000 pickup.
The King Ranch edition, whatever,
anything. You don't have to try hard anymore with the pickup. Yeah. Or somebody in the parking lot. Who in the parking lot drives a loaded Chevy Tahoe? Somebody does.
Those are 60 to 70.
Exactly my point. So if you just park it next to that, the perception is not the reality in that equation. I realize that could be an awkward situation. I'm not suggesting that you do that. But that's the conversation that I kind of like.
I
know
love
I'm weird, but I do like that conversation because people go, wait a minute, how are you doing that? And
right.
then you go, well, you know, your car cost this and my car cost half that or two thirds of that or no more than
but
yours.
But then he's explaining it all the time to
you
everybody.
You are, but
having to justify, no,
and that's,
it looks
and
like.
And that's the thing. But I think you can justify without apologizing.
Yeah,
you
sure.
You can justify from, and granted, I'm just wired this way and I don't mind doing it, but you can justify from that place of, let me just tell you the realities.
Mm-hmm.
$60,000 Tahoe is awesome. I get it. My sports car was 35.
Right.
Okay.
It's
not a judgment. It's just you going, you looked at my car and went, that was 100 grand. And I'm telling you, no, it wasn't.
It looks like it, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Which is fun in its own way. But yeah, that's not where we're going, Patrick. But that's something I always wonder about. I always wonder about, okay, your boss drives the Accord, but what else is in that parking lot? Because I bet you money some other stuff in there is more than you're going to spend.
Especially the trucks. No, I like that. That's a great point. But perception might take precedence here.
I think it's a big factor in this one for sure.
So I lean towards newer and staying right around your budget here. Right around. I started out at the Ford Fusion Sport.
Okay, sure.
2017. If you haven't looked at this car, Patrick, 2.7-liter EcoBoost engine with 325 horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
This is more power than an 07 Cayman S. It's a bigger car, of course, heavier. But
it's like the secret enthusiast car that Ford is going to release.
Can you believe
this? Right, yeah.
All-wheel drive. They start right around 32, 33, but that's brand new. Mm-hmm. So, okay, maybe a place to start thinking, but you're not quite there yet. And I thought of one German car at least, the Volkswagen CC. I've always liked the styling of that car.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of the Passat. It couldn't be boxier. It couldn't be less inspired. It checked a marketing box.
Yeah.
It checked, here's what we've got to do. This is bread and butter. This is our loss leader.
Yeah.
This
Let's compete against the Accords and the Camrys. Let's make a car that works for the U.S.
Come on.
That market. You're right. Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, not a beautiful line on that car, I'd say. I'm just not a fan.
But the CC is the opposite. You're very right. And the CC, in many ways, is the Phaeton's little sister.
That's kind of why I thought
That's kind of where I was going. I think that's genius. I like that a lot.
They're luxurious. You'd have to go back probably to a 2015 maybe. But okay, get yourself a deal. Get one with 25, 30,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
For right about that price, 30K. And beautiful car. Beautiful looking.
Mm-hmm.
So then I went to... well, maybe I'll just go right to it.
Uh-oh.
I did it. I looked at Kia. I did.
Check, please. No one's surprised.
I was
End
looking at
podcast.
Hyundai initially because I
Good.
Thought
yeah.
this is the sweet spot of what he's asking for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You buy a Hyundai or a Kia, nobody's going to question you twice, Patrick. Everybody's going to think you just
you're
bought
right.
smart.
You're,
just
right.
bought,
yeah,
you're
yeah.
just sensible.
Mm-hmm.
Good job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, congratulations on the promotion. You're just a sensible guy, and you got a brand new car, and you have a family, and okay, great. Did you know that the 2017 LX is the only Optima that comes with a 7-speed dual-clutch transmission?
Hmm.
Kia, everyone,
makes
dual-clutch transmissions. It's a 7-speed. Now, it only has the 1.6-liter turbo, so it's limited to 178 horsepower. But okay, it's got a dual-clutch transmission. The point is, they're not Nissan, and they're not the Honda Accords that are putting CVTs in their high-end models.
Okay.
Because
okay.
I went looking, and I thought, come on. As enthusiast, especially the Maxima, which, when it came out, billed itself as the four-door sports car and was always the go-to sports sedan.
Originally.
Now has a CVT and couldn't
and
be
is,
more
yeah.
off the
yeah.
list.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, come on, now Kia is doing dual clutch. Even more reasons to love Kia, everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dual clutch transmissions. Unfortunately, the SX...
Because you needed more reasons. Yeah,
The SX, with more power and more stuff, doesn't have that. It's got... well over 200 horsepower at this point, okay. So the Optima, I think it could be interesting and they've got a lot of power and could be fun. These are where the places that I'm starting, but I want to hear what you're thinking too.
Well, I went two ways with this. first off, I followed the rabbit trail of, okay, let's get you into something that is nicer than people expect for your money.
Yeah.
So I picked two cars under that banner. Okay. And then I picked two cars under the banner of, it's nice, but not amazing, but more fun than people will expect.
Good. Fun
so I
is
went
good.
Both of those categories.
Okay.
They're all four-door sedans. Here we go. Acura TL. Use good. Acura TL.
Good.
Those cars, it is your boss's Honda Accord done better. Okay? It's just going to run.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice materials, great cars. They don't hold their value very well. They're overlooked all the time anyway. They have surprisingly good dynamics. That super handling all-wheel drive is excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
So now you may have to avoid the beak styling. I saw somebody this past week who had a black one.
Rhinoplasty.
Seriously, who had a black one, and they had black wrapped the beak.
Oh, that probably made
very
it
similar
completely
to
disappear.
To the color of the actual car paint. They
sure.
black wrapped
oh,
the
yeah.
beak, and they left the Acura symbol in chrome. Only the Acura symbol.
Okay.
And I have to say, it looked awesome. I
that
actually
works.
Turned my head and went, "What is that? Looks that's awesome." As he went by, that I was very impressed. So you may get end up with the beak styling. I don't love that, but that car is overlooked. It would be great. You could find a used one for your budget all day long. The also in the nicer than you expected category, not as dynamic, but nicer than you expect. Volvo S60.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, great
all day
seats.
Long.
You've
all
talked
day
about
long
how
price.
It's the plasticky nature of that CRV that's really annoying you. The Volvo's the other end. Get yourself a few years
yeah.
old. What was a loaded out S6? It would have been more than your budget originally, but get one that's a few years old. Get the S60 and just enjoy that car. That'll be a very nice place to be. And no one is going to go, "We're paying him too much because you pulled in a Volvo."
Yeah, nobody equates that.
It's a Volvo.
But the interior materials
are awesome.
Very luxurious.
Yep. Yep.
Very nice. I like that.
So those were my two Let's Chase interior. And then two, as far as driving dynamics are concerned, and kind of a little bit more flashy in the styling department, one is Infiniti Q50. Now, it was the G37 sedan. Now
okay.
it's the Q50 because,
okay.
of course, they've changed their whole nomenclature to a different language nobody knows. I'm trying hard to learn at Infiniti.
They're letters that don't exist in the
I'm dedicating myself. So Infiniti Q50 is the current one. Now, the new ones started a little over 30 grand, the new ones. So my question is, go back a couple years.
Something off lease, you're thinking?
Just a couple years back. That's a nice car. Now, I don't love Infiniti's electric steering. Their drive-by-wire steering isn't my favorite.
Disconnected from reality steering?
It is. It's absolutely.
Yeah.
This steering is not connected to anything at all.
No.
Car's turning.
Not your hands.
That's kind of cool.
Not your brain.
But whatever. Yeah.
It's not thinking where you're going.
But I actually think those cars, the more I see them on the road, the more I like them. Actually, in the metal, they're good-looking cars
yeah.
on the road.
Yeah.
And nice interior, good. I don't think that's a judgment car. My last one is a bit of a wild card because it's older.
Okay.
But what about the old Legacy Spec B?
Oh.
Now, that is a genuinely fun car. Now, you've gone back a little bit. It's not going to be as nice as these
Ooh.
Others because it's going to be older. But you could go manual. And that is an STI in grown-up person's clothing. I mean, it is.
True.
And I would drive the STI all day long. But
yes.
the Legacy Spec B is a hidden STI. Now, you're going to
yeah.
have a hood scoop, so people are going to be like, "What'd you buy there?" Maybe. Maybe.
There's
but,
power under there,
but
everybody.
You could, but that's the thing, though. You could do all the tuning patterns of a Subaru WRX STI. You could do whatever you want to with a car. You could make it
yeah.
a rock star under the hood if you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Dynamically could be great. We did a review of a few years back. It was an awesome car. Nice interior. But, of course, it's going to be the better part of a 10-year-old car. So it's not like the latest and greatest. But
yeah.
I think it's going to beat your Honda. So that's my wild card. That's my list.
Okay. Well, this is going to be interesting because, Patrick, you've got some decision making here to do.
What else do you have?
Well, that's kind of where I was leaving things. I thought of the Mazda 6, the Touring Edition. You can get with a 6-speed manual transmission.
Mm-hmm.
And because he says in here, well, he's just talking about, you know, something fun, and we still come back to. The Mazda 6 just doesn't get enough love.
True,
it's
true.
It's a great-looking car. The fact that it's a brand-new car that you can buy with a manual transmission, and it's
yeah.
not a BMW,
mm-hmm.
this deserves accolades. Mm-hmm. Mazda, everybody.
And as we have said before, Mazda kills it in dynamics.
Yeah.
In almost
yeah.
every category, if they make a car in that category, it might not be the nicest, it might not be the most powerful, but it will be among the top in driving dynamics in every category that they play. And that is an impressive thing to do for a company that small.
Agreed. All right, Patrick, let us know. We talk about turbocharged engines so much and how much horsepower you can extract.
Porsche's turbocharged now. Yeah. We can't avoid it. Exactly. The turbos are turbo, but the whole rest of the lineup is too.
Well, the turbos bring their own problems as well, like heat soak, strain on parts, strain on the engine. But the industry standard test that AMSOIL Signature Series uses is 4 times better than their competitors in protection and deposits.
That test sounds boring, but they've really exceeded it.
Exactly. Well, if you want to get every torque out of that turbo, go to AMSOIL.com and look up your car on their lookup table right there so you know exactly which product to use for your car. Well, we'll jump into the next debate here from Justin in Philadelphia, who's a 36-year-old father of four.
Busy, busy man.
Who is reading his words thinking, I drive an 06 Prius. I'm embarrassed to type this.
Why did I type that? Yeah. did you read how he drives this Prius? Did you read
this
that?
This is the best thing ever. So he needs four doors because he's got four kids. He's got, you know, school and all that stuff. But he's so annoyed with the Prius at this point, he floors it everywhere he goes. And he knows he's not getting 38 miles to the gallon, but he's just trying to kill the car. And it will not die.
He's actually trying to injure the vehicle and get low gas mileage. And it is still spiting him in both areas.
Yeah.
It's still getting him better gas mileage than most cars on the road, though mid-30s for a Prius is the lowest I've ever heard. So he's getting mid-30s, and the car refuses to die. So he's asking us, he's practically begging us to find him anything else that can meet his budget. His budget is lower here. So what's he dealing with?
Well, he didn't really specifically call stuff out here. He hates spending more than $15,000 on a used car.
That was the key thing.
However, he has been on the reservation for a Tesla Model 3.
Which is going to be a lot more than that.
Which is a lot more than that. Yeah. So I'm not exactly sure, Justin, don't give us a real range here, but I think we've got some different things for you to think about here. Mm-hmm. All right, so his wife has the Odyssey, so that covers the family thing, but he still needs four doors. Drops them off at school, drops the kids off at school. He drove his friend's first-generation Mazda RX-7 in college and just loved it. And well. Mm-hmm. Who wouldn't?
Yeah, not surprised by that at all, yeah.
Takes out his brother's Miata every chance that he can, but of course that doesn't work for the daily driving thing. Thinking about Jettas, Civics, but he feels trapped in economy land. Mm-hmm. We've got to get you out of Prius land to start with. We've got to get you away from this kingdom.
That is step one, for sure.
All right, so
you're thinking Corolla, right?
Exactly, and we're done.
There we go, thank you.
Solved. So he's considered the Accord Sport, Acura ILX, mm-hmm. GTI, and as I mentioned before, he's put his reservation down, put his money down on the Tesla Model 3.
Yeah.
But here's the catch, though. He doesn't think he's ready to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of wondering why. I guess he's saying here he doesn't want the attention of the brand new car because he's never actually bought a brand new car and just feels comfortable with the reliability of the Hondas and mentions anything with a turbo just feels like a thing you're going to have to fix later on down the road. But no, that's a Phaeton, Justin.
anything with a Phaeton badge. You're going to have to fix.
Yeah. So he keeps cars a long time as well. So he's thinking, when I buy a car, he's always thinking about keeping it 10 years, mm-hmm. a decade. Or, you know, if he buys a 5-year-old car, he's thinking, I'm going to keep this for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Because he gives us a story here. He replaced a hybrid cell, a bad cell in the Prius last year, for $40, mm-hmm. did it himself, mm-hmm. instead of the dealer charging him $3,500.
Yeah.
Well done, Justin. Way to go.
Do you ground yourself somehow when you do that? Are you wearing rubber shoes? I'm joking, but I'm also kind of asking.
I'm sure there's something. You got to wear the strap like you do when you're changing the memory on your computer.
What do you do? What do you do? How do you put on the clean suit? How does this work? What do you look like in your garage when you're changing out hybrid parts? I just don't even understand
The Prius, probably nothing. Probably fine.
You're going to have to write into us and explain what that looks like because I'm very confused. But I actually tried to stay under the $15,000.
Oh, you did?
Even though I agree, I want to hear what you're going to say because I suspect you've given him some good new options because I agree. The Model 3 puts us, let's be honest, the Model 3 is going to be $35,000 on paper only.
Yes.
The one everybody's going to leave the dealer with is going to be $45,000 to $50,000. It just is. because by the time it's the box checking disease that we have for not Tesla, for every automaker. You go, well, yeah, I really would like to have that. Oh, I'd really like to have that too. And suddenly 10 grand has been added on.
Yeah.
It is going to be 35 grand on paper only because every, that's the other thing
that's
about
how Tesla's going to make their money back.
But it's the other thing. Well, they're going to keep making their money on the big ones.
Well,
and
yeah.
They've said publicly they're trying. I mean, Elon Musk is publicly trying to get as many Model 3 reservation holders into Model S's as he can. Because he continues to say that the Model S is the better car. The Model 3 is the entry car. So, but everybody's going to leave the dealer with a $45,000 to $50,000 Model 3. I don't think anybody's going to have a base one.
It's not a
for one reason only. Actually, for two reasons only. Two options, you know, everybody's going to check on that car. Are they going to want ludicrous mode? They're going to be as fast as
it can be. Of course, of course.
And they're going to want the charging capability at the fast chargers.
Right.
And if they throw out ludicrous mode, they're going to want they're going to add back what is the autopilot, which is also going to be extra. Those three options, you know, write those three options: ludicrous mode, autopilot, and fast charging is probably going to be $6,000 before you blinked. So you've broken $40,000.
I agree with you. I'm with you on that. I keep looking at your story here, Justin, and I think you are a candidate though for an electric car. Because he says here he commutes into Philadelphia 2 days a week for a 45 miles round trip. And the other 3 days out of the week, he's just puttering around town where he lives in the suburbs. So I'm thinking, okay, four doors. You were already interested in the Tesla Model 3. And that brings me to the Bolt. I'm sure you probably saw it coming.
Yeah.
I'm sure everybody saw it coming.
It stacks up that way for sure.
However, I've talked about this car as Chevrolet catering to the Uber and Lyft crowd and the ride share service drivers, which, yes, very true. I recently rode in one out of John Wayne Airport in Orange County.
Oh, yeah.
My driver picked me up. It was a Lyft driver. He picked me up in the Bolt, and I saw him pop up on the screen. I thought, really?
That's cool.
You know,
cool.
He didn't make a misspell.
Good.
It's not a Volt. It truly is a Bolt.
Yeah, cool.
Sure enough, he rolled up in a Bolt. And yeah, you've talked about the federal tax rebates, which for the Bolt equate to about $7,500. So on their website, they're saying the car is really about $29,000 and change, and I'll bet you they'd work with you. I bet you, Chevy, if you could think about a monthly payment, and I know that you're trying to keep the price down.
Or think about a lease, because it's that new technology.
That's kind of where I'm going.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm thinking, because my driver cleaned over 300 miles. Now he's puttering around flat Orange County. Okay. He said, when I go to LA and I have to go up a hill, my mileage goes off a cliff. Really? Okay.
Electric cars, not for cliffs.
So, you know, he's genuinely getting 300 miles out of the day, which means he's working an entire day doing the Lyft and Uber driving thing without any fear.
Yeah,
which
that's impressive. That genuinely is.
Well, yeah, which means, Justin, you can do your commute and everything without fear. And again, it comes down to the federal tax rebate, but it comes down to maybe the monthly payment for you, if you can work that in. And I think just the fact of owning an electric car and owning new technology would be an exciting thing, even though you are still in economy land, but it's a different thing. I mean, just think about your kids squealing when you take them for the ride. Daddy, do it again. When, you know, you pin the throttle and all four of them are in the car with you and you're having a bunch of fun. And you can just go drive for no reason because you're not burning gas.
Sure.
So think about just the fun you could have with a family. It could just be a family.
The family
kind
Bolt.
Of thing. Really? The family Bolt.
All right.
So I'm thinking Bolt. But Justin in here says that he's, you know, anything with a turbo feels like something to fix later on. What I just suggested for Patrick here, the Mazda 6 with a manual transmission, they're right about $30,000 for the Touring Edition.
Sure.
Maybe you could get one just 1 or 2 years old.
Yeah.
It's not a turbo, still good power, manual transmission. It's a sedan. It's a good looking one at that, just as we've discussed.
Yeah.
Why not look at this car again? Because, again, with the Hondas and the Nissans, CBTs. No, thank you. I'm not going to point you that direction. And I feel like you're going to want something really newer and reliable, because that's also what you're talking about in here. So it's two different directions. I realize that. But I'm just wondering, if you are a candidate, you had interest in the Tesla, but you didn't want the flashy, I got the new everything.
Yeah.
And still get all that benefit with the Bolt, because I was impressed with the Bolt. It just seemed simple and it worked and it was clean and well done styling, and it just felt like, you know, a bit of an economy car, but all electric.
But it does what it's supposed to very, very well.
It does what it's supposed to.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were just humming right along. I didn't get any sense of, when we drive this, when you and I finally do our review on this car, that we're going to find, you know, this just doesn't work. It's a well-sorted car.
For what
and
it
I'm
is.
Sitting in the back
for what
seat.
It is. I can see that. That makes sense to me based on how they've attacked it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I'm kind of landing on those two.
Okay.
Just they're different.
Yeah. I went a different category for Justin because I did go, okay, let's just assume 15 grand's the tops. Clearly, because of the Model 3, you can go elsewhere. But I just took that 15 grand figure and went, all right, I want to find you used. Here were my parameters. I want to find you used, and I want to get you. You've been in a Prius. I want to get you a rear-wheel drive, non-turbo, four-door sedan for the family for less than 15 grand.
Anything but a Prius.
But I just thought this is the exact opposite category.
Yeah,
let's get you a very different driving experience out of it. So I've got a couple for you.
Okay.
One of the ones I thought of, you've got four kids you're moving around. You need a big sedan. What about a Pontiac G8?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, for your money, you can absolutely get the V6s all day long. You might be able to find one of the V8s. Now, that is a car, what was that, 08, 09, so it's already 5-6 years old, okay, 7
sure.
years old.
The family burnout car, though, if you get the V8.
It is the convenient
the
family burnout.
We'll like that.
And it's, you know, it's Chevy Legos under the hood. So it's, you know, you can keep that car running. You know, they don't
That's
make
funny.
Them anymore, but
That's
it's
funny.
Got, you know, it's got an LS motor, and it's just, it's a big Chevy.
Yeah.
You know, built in Australia, but yes, we do have that part. I mean, it's not going to be body panels are going to be that's going to be the thing. The body panels are going to be the only thing that aren't going to be everywhere. Everything
right.
else in the car is going to be like, yeah, how many of those do you need?
Right.
You know,
just got a
so
new shipment.
Big Pontiac G8 would be fun for the family. I think you would enjoy driving it, rear wheel drive, and it's actually got a good amount of space. It's a good full size sedan, so I've got that one. And then thinking about the Infiniti prior got me thinking about Infiniti here as well. Because non-turbo V6 in the Infiniti G37 sedan, you can find those.
Mm-hmm.
Get one of those. Those are good cars. They feel like luxurious cars. Drive that. Enjoy it. Rear-wheel drive. You know, you avoided the German marks here. I mean, I want to speak to the ones you brought up as well. The Acura ILX. Okay. I'm very...
It's European Civic.
Yeah, I'm very just kind of bland on that car. But the Accord... Accords can be taken and turned into surprisingly good dynamic vehicles. They're good from the factory.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah,
you know, we know a guy here that really good tires and sway bars, and he could keep up with just about anybody.
So
in the
amazing.
Canyons. He's also a little nuts, but which helps.
That helps.
But at the same time, I mean, this is what he did. It was tires and sway bars and just guts, essentially. So that Accord would be really good. I would also say tires, because the last Accord we drove was massively let down by its tires.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think the Accord would be a great one. And that's the size that got me into the Infiniti as well. I think GTI is fine, but maybe a little small for you, as is the ILX. So I went bigger sedan. Those are my three. Your Accord Sport you brought up, Pontiac G8, and Infiniti G37 sedan.
No, I like it. I like it. Well, Justin, hopefully that's helpful. I'm curious as to what you do end up getting and what
Definitely,
direction you
yeah.
go.
The problem with this disease that we talk about, the real problem, is at some point you run out of either money or places to put your cars. Now, if you've solved
yeah.
the money problem, you may still be like, well, honey, what do we park outside? And now you have a real issue with that car just getting beat on by
yeah.
the weather.
UVs are, you know, up. Definitely a problem.
Well, you're getting all technical about it. I was just talking about just weather and sun no
yeah,
matter where you are.
Exactly right. So if you're in California or at the beach or you have a lot of sun, absolutely Covercraft has the products for you. They've got dash mats. They've got car covers like we're talking about. All kinds of stuff.
You have turned me into a believer about the sunshade. I have to admit.
It keeps the car cooler.
Mm-hmm.
It protects your instrument panel. It protects from UV damage, all of that stuff. Don't forget to use the word debate when you're checking out at covercraft.com for free shipping in the U.S. All right, so let's jump to the questions. Where do you want to start? We've got a lot of good ones again.
We've got a lot of them. Actually, Cars and Comments asked a question we've never been asked. He said, what are Tom's personal car or cars?
I'm grinning over here.
And this is an interesting question because I'm going to get it a little bit wrong because I don't remember the year, but if memory serves, he used to have a Volkswagen, was it a Polo?
Was it a Polo?
Or was it a Fiat? Or was it the Fiat Punto? he had a tiny little he's chastising me right now for not knowing off the top of my head. But yes, this was years ago. This was his car that he bought in his late teens, early 20s for no money and proceeded to put tons of money trying to make it fast and reliable, and it was neither.
Yeah.
So then he jettisoned that car, and Tom, his life is structured in such a way that he actually doesn't even own a car. So he is living this weird dual life, because his normal life is structured that public transit gets him everywhere he needs to go,
right?
And he doesn't need a car. And then we're still very jealous. Press loans land in Tom's lap for 2 weeks at a time.
Yeah, and 200 mile an hour runs on the Autobahn,
and we sometimes struggle to get a full week. I mean, we'll shoot a car if you can give it to us for 48 hours. We'll shoot a car, but he gets 2 week loaners. There was a section for about 3 or 4 months last year where, because they were 2 week loaners, he went from press car to press car to press car to press car, like four in a row.
So
he
awesome.
Had a car for like 3 months, and none of them were his, and every 2 weeks it changed.
Yeah.
So what does Tom drive? What's his current press car? That's
exactly
what he drives.
Exactly. And you've probably seen the new Škoda video where he says that he is actually getting in the GT86 here soon.
Yes. Oh, I didn't tell you this. I forget which one is first. But he's getting in a 911 GTS, the 991.2 GTS, and he's getting in a
massive
Toyota 86. And
jealousy.
I forget which one he has booked first, but the second of those two press cars is meeting him at the drop off place for the first.
That's when you know you've figured it out. That's, well done, Tom.
Yes, he made it work for him. Well done, sir.
Oh man, let's jump to some more here. I've been cruising around, looking at a few things. What should we look for in a school, a high performance driving school? As a matter of fact, we got asked for a few places on Instagram and Facebook here. Well, all the above. You list Edmund here as asking the question: what should we look for? Cost, seat time, car availability. All those are very good. I'm thinking about tiered structures. Most car schools do have a tiered, you know, 1 day, 2 day, 3 day. Some of even go to the 4 day full driving experience.
Even go to licensing schools, yeah.
You and I have talked about open wheel racing, and you know, we look at various schools that have different kinds of car. Bondurant, I think, is all vets now Phoenix.
Bondurant has gone Hellcats. Remember, they went all Dodge.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They were Corvettes for a while,
and then vets are the school there in Pahrump. Is vets the local school here is all Ford. They're doing, you know how many schools are doing right now? They're doing the Fiesta Octane thing we did. They're doing the Mustang GT thing that we did. They're doing the Focus RS school that we haven't done. Hint, 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 hint. Also doing the Mustang GT 350R experience. And if there is an owner thing for the new Ford Big Boy GT, they will probably get that one as well.
Unbelievable.
But well, they're running all these schools, which comes back to this question. I would actually say, is there a mark of cars or a kind of car you want to drive? That could be a consideration. But I submit to you, look at the driving school over the car.
Okay,
because
fair enough.
I think you're going to get similar experiences most places.
And from an instruction standpoint, you're saying? From just basics and just car control, that kind of thing?
If you've never done this, whatever car you're in, you're probably going to realize is more capable than you ever imagined. So I think if it's your first school, it's kind of car non-biased, unless you have a specific car you either own or want to own, and that's going to be the best way possible to really hone it and know what it's like. But if you're just wanting to learn car control, anything they put you in is going to be great for that, if it's a really ground level.
Mm-hmm. No, I like that too. I mean, cars do play a part, you know, if there's a particular mark that you
absolutely
are curious about.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the Fords, because we've talked about Ford has the breadth from the Fiestas to the GT.
Yes.
What are you looking for?
Yes.
We got you covered. So that is a great point, though. So all of those things, I think, is a great thing to look at. And, cost is a big factor. We agree. That always plays a big part into that.
That's going to be a deciding factor for pretty much any school you wind up at.
Yeah, unless you buy the car and then they
They give you a school. Yeah, there's
does.
Always that category. You could just go buy you have to buy a brand new Fiesta ST or any of the other cars we're listing, and they will throw in a school, but you did have to buy an entire car to get yourself
Yes, you had to buy the product, actually. All right. What else is on your list here?
We've got a, let's see. Oh, Cole is asking a question I have to at least touch on, because I think you and I probably disagree on this. What are our thoughts on the blacked out wheels look?
Oh, yes.
And honestly, Cole, I really don't like it. I really personally don't like it. But I have to explain the why, because I know it's popular. I think wheels are, this is the bad way to put it, but wheels are the jewelry of a car.
Yeah.
When they're done right, a set of wheels can completely transform a car. I just recently, like 2 weeks ago, put my Inkies, my nice summer rims, back on my FRS.
Right, right.
And now I'm like re-in love with the car again, because I don't like the stock wheels. But I like just the way it looks on those wheels. Now, granted, I have the bright orange Ridiculous Teenager's car on bright silver wheels. They aren't chrome, by the way. I'm not a chrome guy, but they are the bright silver wheels. I think if you have a bright color car, it needs silver wheels. I feel like the black wheels mute it.
Hmm.
The only exception for me for black wheels, because we all know I don't like silver cars, but I think silver cars work with black wheels because the car itself otherwise is too close to the color of its own wheels.
Contrast, you're saying?
Yeah,
just simple contrast?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the new 911 GTS has black wheels, the center lock black wheels, and I have to admit I do like them on there. But
wait, you like them on a Porsche product? That's weird.
Dude,
that's weird.
I know. That's not like me. I gravitate more towards the charcoal finish, though. You know, a dark charcoal. Black has been around a long time now. I mean, yeah, we've seen it in just about every iteration at this point. And I see something new and different, and then I realize, well, it doesn't have black wheels. I can see the wheel designs, and parts of them aren't blacked out. Well, what do you know?
Yeah,
That actually looks good. It looks refreshing.
That brings up a very good point. When you have a black wheel, it's really hard to tell if the wheel design's any good.
Right, right. You could just have a simple thing, simple design. It looks okay, but then a more complex design, it's going to be difficult to clean, even though it's black wheels and you don't need to clean them as much. But still, you can't see the design for what it is.
That's good. So that's good. I hadn't thought about it in those terms. Of course, you thought about it that way, which is excellent.
Yeah, more towards the charcoal side. Anyway, Tyler F. is writing to me about why does he hate the 6 Series Coupe, but he likes the 6 Series Sedan. And he says, I think it's because the coupe's lack of doors make it look unfinished. And I want to touch on that question, and then another question from Max asking me about another styling question here. I love both these questions, guys. On the 6 Series, I believe it's because of the long roofline. And you like it, yes.
Okay.
The
okay.
lack of doors doesn't break up that long distance. Think about the long, beautiful slope
You're
of the
right.
roof line.
There's a huge roof on that.
If it's just a single door, it looks as if there's some unfinished business about the car. Whereas small two-door coupes, it takes up the entire cabin. It really works. Even the Mercedes GT. Think about that car. Long nose, beautiful
huge.
Styling. But the proportions don't look off because the greenhouse is broken up by just the cabin space, just the two doors.
Yeah.
Whereas, that long coupe shape, that's why, long S-Class, the S-Class Coupe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It awesome car, but is it sporty? Is it luxurious? What is it trying to be?
Interesting. Okay.
And
I see that assessment.
Yes. I think you're touching on it here, Tyler, but that long roof line and then creating the door shapes and breaking up that section so your eye, because our eyes need to relate to shapes. Even in sci-fi films, look at stuff in the film and you'll see familiar shapes that you can relate to. Same thing here. So you want your eye wants something you can relate to. And if you have that long, unbroken thing, you're thinking, okay, what are we trying to do here? Is this
interesting? You're trying to categorize it and you're stuck in the middle. Yeah. I see that. I love that response.
It's great. So Max asks another question here about a front-wheel drive transverse engine car styled to look like the rear-wheel drive longitudinal hashtag dishonest sheet metal. I agree. Yes, it does. And it depends on the design brief of the car. The S2000 is a beautiful example of the longitudinal classic. Your car, the GT86, really works. It's a classic proportion. But you're right. When the transverse engine car is trying to
it's a front-wheel drive, and it looks like a rear-wheel drive. You know, I can think of two right now that are out right now. One is the current Maxima.
Uh-huh.
And the other, even though we talk it up and love it, the current Mazda 6, that car looks like it should be rear-wheel drive.
It kind of does. You're right.
It's beautiful, and we really like it.
You're
but that car looks like, oh, it's a rear-wheel. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Well, then, Max, they get to save on money and on build cost because all of that stuff that is necessary to be engineered is right at the front of the car. That's why front-wheel drive cars are so much less expensive because all the HVAC, the firewall, the suspension, the engine is all right there. The back wheels just hold the car off the ground.
The back wheels keep it from scraping along the ground. You're right.
That's I mean, there's suspension and tuning and all that stuff.
But you're right.
They just hold the back end of the car. You think, if I chop it in half and did the Chevy Chase thing from European Vacation,
or could I James drive Bond around? Before that.
Exactly. Correct. Yeah. Correct. I love that. So, yes, proportion is a huge thing. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're touching on is the interaction between the marketing and accounting design departments versus the design department. The designers are car people. They want it to look beautiful and amazing.
Yeah.
And then they're saddled with, you know what?
By the way,
we're going to make it over here on this production line, so it's got to be front-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're kidding me. All right, so little styling tricks.
What are our problems? Yep. How do we solve it? That's good. That's good. Dammy asked a question I wanted to answer real quick. He said, have we driven all of our bucket list cars, and if not, what's left? Dammy, what's great is that stuff keeps getting added.
It's ongoing.
And it keeps getting added at lots of price points. That's what I really like about it. It's not just like the exotics keep being added. One that remains on the top of my personal list, though, is I want to drive a Huayra. I so want to drive a Huayra.
And I'm going in,
honestly, not expecting it to be the most dynamically awesome car ever. That's an experience I want to have. Mm. That is the only thing for me personally close to the Countach category of I don't really care what the result is. I just want to say I did it. Mm. The Countach was that for me. And I just loved that, even though there were many flaws. I loved it because it was I'm finally getting to have this experience and I can walk away and say I drove a Countach and it was like this. Hmm. That's what I want for the Pagani Huayra. I just want to drive one to be able to say I have driven that and here's what it's like.
That's a great response. Yeah, Dammy, I like this because it's always ongoing. And one of the questions that annoys all of us, Todd and I included, is, oh, you like cars, huh? So what's your favorite car?
What's your favorite car?
And then when they pry your fingers off their neck.
Because we'll be...
Stop asking me that question.
Yeah, it's... Yeah.
No, it's ongoing. I'm up there with, McLarens. I think a P1 is up there for me. I always come back to McLaren for the high-end stuff, I guess. But I like your Huayra.
It's just... Pagani. That car is under my skin in a big, big way.
That's so cool.
It really is interesting.
All right. Well, we've got Jordan asking a question about the Viper. What features should the next Viper have should Dodge resurrect it once again?
I was going to say its first feature should be its existence. That would be the first feature.
It should exist. Well, it's got a production line, the Mack Avenue production facility in Detroit. Dammy, I liked your comment here. A better marketing department, possibly, but that's for Dodge. We're talking just the Viper here. Let's go back to the original recipe, but let's go back even further to the Cobra. Shelby Cobra. Mm-hmm. It was all about a light car with a lot of power.
It's a weight thing.
So let's stop going into this huge, heavy. I think that's why we've never really talked about them as much, because they just seem like a huge, heavy hammer.
They do, but I have to go there. The last Viper was an interesting success in styling because it looked enormous.
Yeah.
And it was technically shorter than the 991 911. The current 911 is technically, I know you think I'm insane, but I am encouraging you to run to Google right now and check me. The last Viper was technically shorter than the current 911. And if you saw them individually, you would think it's simply not possible. When you see them together, you realize the Viper's a lot smaller than you thought. But I agree with your point because the Cobra was – what was it before? It was the
– well, originally it was an AC.
Exactly.
It was a British
tiny
roadster.
When you see the first gens, you're shocked by how little they are.
Oh, they're tiny.
A V8 in that. I mean then you go, well, here's the flying Miata of today. It's that kind of thing. It's like a Miata with the big V8 in it. That's the equivalent. Yes. It would be really interesting, but that's not Dodge's. Dodge's whole lineup is huge car, huge engine. It would be interesting.
That's true. It doesn't subscribe.
For them to do a Viper that was a little bit, okay, let's pare it down. Even though the last Viper wasn't even as heavy as you think, but it just, the whole presence of that car is, I am enormous. And it would be interesting if they did something that was more, I don't know, just tighter. That would be, of course, I'm the Lotus guy speaking, so who's shocked?
Well, Jordan, technically, if we want to really slice the onion finely here.
And we do.
The Viper is not a Dodge product. It's an SRT.
Okay.
Which was brought out to be a separate brand. The only car that SRT builds is the Viper, but it was designed. It was the first two generations were the Dodge, but then it went to SRT mm-hmm. with the, I guess, the bright horizon of, hey, we're going to bring out more products under this SRT nomenclature.
No, we're not.
Didn't happen.
No, we're not.
The Viper's all we got. So therefore, they could get away from the Dodge recipe of big, heavy, huge engine. They could theoretically distance themselves and go towards a Lotus. Hey, let's go to a lighter weight powertrain. Maybe it is electric. Maybe it's a hybrid. Something like that, but a lighter chassis, even smaller, and get back to the original Cobra recipe that was where the Viper was birthed from.
I see. Okay.
By Bob Lutz back in the day.
I see.
I'm just thinking about going lighter for that car because it always struck me as heavy. I hate it when you bring up the 911
you don't,
is bigger
you don't
than
like,
that car.
You don't like
I
me going stats to your detriment
no,
there.
I hate it.
Stats against Porsche for once. That doesn't happen often, but every now and then I've got a zinger. Yeah.
And boy, you dance on that, don't you? Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking is going that direction for the Viper. Should they bring it back? But they have a slight opportunity to categorize to really capitalize on the SRT brand and do something different that isn't another Hellcat engine in another product.
Hellcat engine now with 900 horsepower. Hey. Next year, join us for 1,100. It's just that we're headed that way.
We're headed
that way. It's still a riot though. It makes for funny videos. I'm sure it'll be great. I have one last one. Do you have any more?
I think we've got so many. Well, let's go ahead and wrap it up with this.
Okay,
that's perfectly fine.
Adam Fox wrote in on Facebook and asked an interesting question. This could be four podcasts worth. I'm going to try to keep it really short. You said you and a friend want to create both a YouTube channel or maybe either a YouTube channel and a podcast or vice versa. You're not sure, but you share a hobby. You want to start a podcast or YouTube channel based around that, and obviously that's what Paul and I do. That's how we started.
Yeah.
So you're asking us kind of do's and don'ts recommendations. Here's the first thing I'm going to say to you, Adam. You're going to have to get really comfortable back and forth with that person. And if it's if you haven't been on camera before, just start getting on camera. Get on camera just to do stuff that nobody's going to see, just so you can watch it and be self-critical and get comfortable with the camera is the other person in the room. That's part of it. That's if you're going to go on video.
Yeah.
If you're going to go on podcast, you're going to have to get to a place where, look, I'll be really honest. It's been weird the last couple of weeks to sit in a podcast studio with Paul. I've had to kind of recalibrate my – and we've done this forever.
Yeah.
But just sitting across the table from each other has been weird. We've had to kind of get used to that dynamic again. So you have to get to where you ignore the mics. So you've got to get to where you and your friend can do whatever you're doing and equipment is irrelevant. The equipment may as well not exist. That's the first point. Second point is give it a structure. Don't just go off and just whatever we're going to talk about will be funny because
it won't work. It can work with some podcasts.
It can,
but it depends on the subject matter, though.
Even if it's really tenuous,
go,
we're going to talk about these three or four categories for roughly this amount of time just to kind of give you some fences because what happens sometimes is with no fences at all, you kind of go nowhere.
Yeah, you can just
so I would say kind
nothing.
Of pick a vague direction and we have to do this too, and sometimes we're not good at it. Be willing to pivot and change. We realize the podcast is going this way or going that way. We should alter. Questions exist on the podcast because we listened to you guys and we should start taking questions.
Yeah.
So be willing to pivot and go a different direction, but start in a direction. Give yourself some fences and some parameters and chase that.
Great commentary, great advice. And it almost doesn't matter the subject matter at that point.
No, it's
if you
not.
Wrap some structure around it, just like you all listening have seen Todd and I do with a podcast now, I love the questions. I think, to be quite honest, it's one of our favorite parts because they're off the cuff.
Yeah.
They're instant. all of you are listening and waiting and watching on the social media. So when we drop questions, you know, hey, we're posting up for questions.
It's fun, isn't it?
You're right in there, which is awesome. And we read them as they trickle in.
Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
a lot of fun before we podcast. And I think it's one of your favorite parts.
Absolutely.
Of course, we love
it's
the debates.
Really,
but
it's also the place we can most yeah. likely get ourselves in trouble because it doesn't have any research. We just go, yeah. here's what I think. And then we go, that wasn't right.
And many people too. Will correct us and send
which
us emails.
Which is fine. Thank you, guys. Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much again. We really continue to thank you because it's you that have built this podcast into what it is. Mm-hmm. It continues to grow to even – it's growing beyond our expectations at this yeah. point, which is pretty fun.
And you guys rating and sharing it is the reason it's a top 10 automotive podcast. We encourage you so much. Thank you. We do read all those reviews. They are very helpful. People tell us how they found the podcast because of looking – Top 10 Automotive, looking and reading reviews. So if you haven't rated and reviewed, we'd love for you to do that. Thank you. One small piece of show business for the podcast for this week. Paul will not be with us for Friday's podcast.
Thank you.
Chance
for that.
Will be sitting in.
Yeah.
We're going to
yeah.
talk about his Mustang project, which is really cool and has got some progress. He's going to talk about that. We'll be doing questions with Chance. We'll be doing car debates with Chance. That'll be really cool. And I'll tease it again when we get there. This coming week, week 7 of our TV show is one of our favorites of the entire season. We're very excited about Mid-Ages and Mountains on TV, cut down. It's an interesting little variant on that. That'll be really cool as well.
Yeah, never been shown. So this is pretty awesome. Well, guys, make it a great week. Thank you again for listening, for watching, and until next time, cheers.